This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
This is a special episode brought to you by Manipal Academy of Banking, Financial Services and Insurance. In today's world, securing financial stability is crucial for leading a stress-free life. While investing plays a significant role in achieving our financial goals, it's not enough on its own. If you often find yourself overwhelmed by the plethora of financial products and investment plans, then this episode is just for you. We have an expert with us today who will help demystify the complexities of financial planning and empower us on our journey to financial security. Hi, I'm your host Radhika, Senior Producer at HD Smartcast. Joining us is Mr. Robin Bhaumik, Chief Business Officer, Manipal Academy of BFSI.
Welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started with your money journey.
Hi, Robin. Welcome to Why Not Mint Money.
Thank you, Radhika.
Okay, Robin. So yesterday I was reading an article and the article talks about this survey, which says only 27% of India's population is financially literate. And only 16.7% of Indian students have a basic understanding of finance and money management. I think this is one of the reasons why financial literacy has become a talking point for both adults and students alike. Now that we know the importance of financial security, Robin, let's discuss some common challenges people face in financial planning and how can we avoid such challenges?
Sure, Radhika. So I think those numbers that you just read out, in my opinion, it's probably a lot more scary and a lot worse than that. But we will come around to it. I think in terms of the challenges, Radhika, the first thing is that, we don't talk about money enough in this country. It's possibly a cultural thing, but, right from the time when we go to school, we are all taught to consume knowledge. We are constantly reminded that we need to find gainful employment once we have graduated. What we are never told to do or never told to think of is, once we have earned that money, what do I do with it? How do I grow it? How much of it should I spend? How much should I save? What are the saving products? What are the saving tools? What are the options, alternatives that are available to me? What can I do to be, let's say, even have an ambition of financial freedom or financial independence, as we like to call it? There is a lot of talk these days where a lot of the new generation, they talk about early retirement. So this whole concept of FIRE, which is financial independence and retire, early, has become very popular among certain circles. But to your point about, let's say, 16% of people who are in school are aware of financial products, financial literacy, as you called it. The reason I said it's probably a lot worse than that is because they might be aware of some very basic needs that they need to fulfill from a money management perspective. So, for example, how much money do they need to earn? What are the savings options? The fact that they need a bank account. They could potentially get a credit card, and so on and so forth. But even certain hygiene requirements, such as the awareness of credit and why do you need a credit score? Why do you need to build a healthy credit score? What are the things that actually affect and impact your credit score? None of these things are known to a lot of people in the country. And I'm not just talking about people who are in school or college. I'm talking about even people like you and me, for example, we probably do not know the 10 things that might impact your credit score. And yet when we go in and check a CIBIL score, we are shocked because a lot of those entries we have probably not recognized, we have not heard of. And when it impacts our credit score negatively, we start scratching our heads. Last but not the least, in terms of investments, in terms of portfolios, in terms of growing your money, growing your wealth, in terms of a lot of the financial products that are available to us, India and Indians are generally comfortable with the very three basic tools that are known to most of us. Number one is gold. Most Indian families still believe in gold. Number two is real estate. And number three is having a very basic savings account, potentially with some fixed deposits. Now, while these continue to be relevant in the modern day, but the possibilities of growing your money through so many other mechanisms, through so many other tools and products that are available out there is still not known. So I think it's a complex problem. We are in a situation where we need to start talking about money in our living rooms more often. Parents need to start talking about money with their children at a young age. And awareness that financial freedom comes with financial responsibility is something that needs to be built up from a very early age.
Absolutely. So as you said, it is important for parents to talk about this. You know, recently I was talking to a college student. She mentioned that her parents don't invest. And I was laughing because I don't believe, I don't think so, they don't invest. I think they just don't discuss with her because of her age. And that's why financial awareness is very important, barring your age or gender or anything. It is important that we all should talk about it.
Absolutely. If I may just interject there.
Yeah.
I think to a certain extent, that has to do with the way we, you know, interact with our elders in society. For example, in India, it's not respectful to talk back to an elder or to ask questions. Most of us, even when we go to school, we are judged based on our answers, not on the questions that we ask, right? So I think even if they have questions, they would not be asking them. And typically in an environment where, let's say, elders or parents or relatives are involved, these are questions that typically would be, you know, shoved under the carpet. And as a result, most young people are either scared or they are not confident enough that they are asking the right questions. So yeah. Even if there is interest, that interest is killed very early by the social structure.
So financial discipline and financial planning both are very important. We have got this. But who do you think benefits the most from it? Are there any specific group or in general it is important for everyone?
I would think that it's important for everyone. I just want to pick up a couple of points here, Radhika, where I feel very strongly. I think in India, particularly women need to become far more adept at managing money. And it's not in the traditional sense of managing money, the way you would have seen your mother or the way I've seen my mother managing money. They've always managed household expenses, maybe kept some money on the side. Maybe they've bought gold once a year. But in today's day and age, the money management and financial responsibility, fiscal responsibility has evolved significantly. And I feel that particularly women and young girls, they need to be more financially aware. I think gone are the days when the man of the house would earn and everyone else would kind of play a supporting role. So it was naturally on the man of the house to do all of the financial planning and decide investments, etc. So given the fact that now we are more gradually moving into a world where diversity has become far more practical and real opportunity for growth, women need to understand money management, fiscal responsibility, debt, equity, stock markets, far earlier in the game. And to your point, I think this is something that benefits everybody. It's not just going to benefit somebody who is a stock market trader. And knowledge is power. I mean, if you don't know, you will not be able to grow your money as compared to someone else. Last point is that our definition and understanding of risk is also very traditional. For example, if you were to ask your parents that, should I invest in the stock market? There are quite a few parents who would come back and say, nahi, bahut risky hai. Beta, stock market mein invest mat karo. Now, of course, you need to know how to play the stock market, right? For every 10 people who have made a lot of money on the stock market, there are probably 1,000 who have lost significant amount of money in the stock market. Credit cards, to your early point, is no different. So it's financial literacy is the first point. I think people need to know, people need to consume more information. They also need to be a little careful about who they are listening to, because along with good advice, there's plenty of bad advice out there. But again, as I said, once you get started in the process of learning more, you will know what works for you and what doesn't.
Great. So you mentioned that, you know, there are a lot of women should become more financially independent. Do you think seeking professional guidance for comprehensive financial planning is important?
Absolutely. If you are not able to do it on your own, and a lot of us are probably not invested enough, or we don't want to get into the details of, you know, managing your money, then it's far better to hand it to a portfolio manager. And there are a lot of them out there, and there are a lot of apps nowadays where you can kind of have a very simplified view of all of your investments. So if you are not able to do it on your own, then yes, it makes a lot of sense to have a portfolio manager or a financial manager doing it for you. But ignorance is not the answer. So you cannot give it to someone else and keep your eyes shut. You need to keep it open. You need to be tracking what your investments are doing. You need to have a balance in your portfolio. So awareness is still critical. It's extremely important. But definitely in terms of the operational part of it, the investments part of it, the returns part of it, there is no harm in seeking professional advice.
So going for a financial advisor, can you tell us some 5 watch points or maybe red flags that we should see and we should be careful about when we are choosing a financial advisor? Because there are so many in the market. I'm telling you, and I get calls every day.
Yes, so and Radhika, I am not sure whether there are 5 or there are less or more, but I'll probably highlight a few things that you need
please,
to be a little aware
love
of.
To, we'd love to hear.
Number one is that it's always better to work with an institution and not an individual. So, for example, a lot of banks nowadays offer portfolio management services. And they have multiple products in which you can invest in, whether it's an insurance product, whether it's a equity product, whether it's a debt product, whether it's a fixed deposit, etc. So if you were to, let's say, go with the safest option, and assuming you work with, let's say, one of the big banks out there, they will have some kind of a portfolio management service in most cases, which you can leverage. Secondly, it's always better to first understand how you want to allocate your portfolio. And if you were to think that you need not one, but maybe 3 or 4 different people who can come in and help you out, that's probably a better approach. So for example, a lot of us invest in unit-linked products, which are sold sometimes by insurance companies, ULIPs as they're called. Now, for that, you could potentially work directly with your insurance firm. On the other hand, if you're buying equities, there are a lot of companies out there where you can invest in equities directly. If you're buying debt funds, you can again do it directly. So you don't necessarily need to work with one person. So for example, if you're working with, let's say, 2 or 3 different people, or let's say 2 or 3 different institutions, you're always safer, because you get a more balanced view. The third is you need to be realistic in terms of the results that are promised to you. So in case, obviously, if someone is coming back and saying, hey, you know, put in, let's say, 50 lakhs of rupees and I'm going to give you 5 crores in 3 years. Those are the kind of red flags where we need to be a little bit more careful, because while greed is good, but at the same time, greed beyond a point is equal to being stupid. So I think we have to be a little careful about the kind of returns that are promised to us, because there is no fairy tale, right? Everything that goes up will go down. And the best investments are the ones where you need to kind of stick into it for a long period of time. So there are very few short-term benefits. Of course, there are certain areas like, let's say, real estate, etc., depending on at what cycle you buy, you can still make a healthy profit. But I think we need to be a little careful about, you know, people who overpromise. Last but not the least, it's just a little side point that I want to make, not necessarily a red flag in terms of people who are promising you, but we all need to be aware of the tax implications of our investments. So there are certain products and schemes out there which give you a tax benefit. There are certain that don't. Then there is, of course, the role of capital gains. So again, it boils down to knowledge. And before you trust someone to manage your money, you need to have a basic level of awareness in terms of what this person would be doing once you've given them your money.
Yeah, it's like double-edged sword. Now let's dive into some practical tips. Robin, please share some fundamental steps for effective planning, financial planning, and what role do budgeting and expense tracking play in the same?
So let me answer your second question first. I think the first step is a budgeting exercise. And for all of us who have a regular income and who are, let's say, extremely lucky that they know that every month there isn't going to be a surprise in what's going to come into the bank account. For them, the first step is to really start building a budget. Now, there are different ways of building a budget. Some people first look at their expense items and then they say that whatever is left over, I will save. The other and the better way of doing it is to first look at how much you're going to save, which is what I mentioned earlier. So if you're making 100 rupees, start planning your expenses and your budget based on 75 rupees or 80 rupees. The balance 20-25 rupees is not in the spreadsheet at all. So it doesn't come into consideration. Second thing, which is extremely important, is to keep inflation in mind. Inflation is a reality, and that's going to hit all of us over a period of time. And interestingly, inflation that the government reports versus the actual inflation that hits you and me can be very different. So for example, if the government is saying inflation in India is retail inflation is at 5%, but that's for a lot of the basic items that you and I might not be consuming enough of. So the services that you and I consume are possibly escalating in terms of cost or price at a far greater pace. So I think the real inflation that a lot of people get hit by is not what the government says in terms of CPI or retail inflation. It's basically the inflation of products and services that we consume, which could be different. Number three, I think whenever we are doing budgeting, whenever we are doing forecasting of what our finances could look like, it's extremely important that, you know, you kind of maintain that discipline that I mentioned earlier as well. So I think for a lot of young people, there is a tendency to say that, okay, let's just leave this month out of the picture. Or this month, I will not repay my credit card bill. Now, very soon that becomes a habit. And at the end of the day, you know, financial discipline and financial outcomes are all about your financial habits. It's nothing, you know, more complex than that. So I don't know if I answered some of your questions, but Radhika, I think from a budgeting standpoint, you know, this is typically the approach that I would recommend. Of course, we have spoken earlier about using financial planners, about using external agencies or companies that could come in and, you know, do your asset allocation for you, etc. In terms of what is available to you, in terms of what you want to invest in, I think that's a far more personal question, depending on where you are in your life, in your career. Are you an entrepreneur? Are you working for someone else? Are you working in a public sector? But broadly, the financial tools that are available to most of us are as follows. So, of course, there is gold and real estate and bank savings. And those three are the most popular and the ones that a lot of us use. And especially in Indian families, as you would know, I mean, gold is one of the first go-to places in terms of making sure that there is some financial prudence and cushion going forward. The other new areas where a lot of investments have now been happening is, of course, in the equity market, in the debt market. And that could be right from a large cap, mid cap, small cap, depending on the size of the fund. You know, you could, and depending on how aggressive you want to be, you could decide and pick the tools that you want to invest in and how much you want to invest in. Of course, there is the stock market. And a lot of us, especially me, I don't understand the stock market at all and I stay away from it. But for a lot of people who want to be in the stock market, it's important to understand how it works. There is, of course, the whole sentiment part of it, which no science can explain. But having said that, if you keep investing in good companies with a good balance sheet or a good outlook, then the possibility of you making money is a lot greater. There are, of course, more tools out there. People invest in startups. Then you have, you know, people who are investing in bitcoins. And of course, you can invest in, you know, stocks outside of India now. But those are a little bit more, I would say, for sophisticated investors. I personally haven't invested in any of those. But again, before you go down that path, it's important that you read about it, understand the risks and the pitfalls, and not just look at the upsides.
Wow, that was really informative. Now, speaking of professional guidance, what expertise does Manipal Academy of BFSI offer in financial planning and wealth management? And how can our listeners benefit from your program and resources?
So, Radhika, we don't offer financial planning as a service. We are a skill-building institution. So what we do is, in the skills that we build for the banking, financial services, and insurance sector, we teach people around areas that could help them become a wealth manager. We teach them about the various products that are available in the market. But purely from, let's say, either an advisory perspective or so that they are able to do their job properly. However, we have recently tied up for the certificate in financial planning, which is a partnership that we have done with FPSB. And under that, if you were to want to become a financial planner, then you could go through the certification process, which is a globally renowned certificate. And globally recognized as well, where you could become a financial planner and you could offer it as a service. So to your earlier point, Radhika, in terms of using financial planning as a service from people who are coming in to manage your portfolio, etc., a CFP certification gives you that badge of respect, which is an internationally accredited certification. And then you can go on to be a certified financial planner. Now, in terms of the tools and the tips and the tricks of the trade, as I mentioned, we don't teach personal finance management. What we do teach them are the various tools and the tricks and the trade. And we tell them what is available to them. But of course, at the end of the day, where they decide to invest their money is purely their choice. A lot of the professionals who graduate from my academy, they offer this as a service, as a part of their role where they're working. So for example, if you're going to be selling an insurance product, then you should know what are the rules, what are the regulations, what is it that you can do, what is it that you cannot do. And we also teach them how to avoid mis-selling. So the whole concept of being ethically correct, making sure that you're not mis-selling a product, you know what are the pitfalls, you know what are the risks associated with the product. We teach them all of that. So I hope that answers your question. We are training professionals who offer this as a part of a service, or that's being something that they do as a part of their job in the company that they end up joining.
That was really insightful, Robin. I did a bit of LinkedIn stalking and noticed that you're an avid reader. So please tell me if I've got that right.
You have. I like reading, and I have been reading a lot of books recently, including one on AI and machine learning. I do like reading a lot.
As we wrap up this episode, please tell your top three book recommendations for our listeners.
So I would say my first recommendation is something that a lot of people know extremely well, but I cannot reiterate enough. So it's Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And for a lot of people, that's the Bible. And it kind of puts the whole concept of becoming rich through investments, you know, by leveraging other people's money. It doesn't always have to be your own money that makes you rich. For example, can I take a loan at a certain percentage interest? And can I grow that money at a higher percent interest and make some profit out of it? So for me, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is definitely my number one go-to. There is another book by Napoleon Hill. I think it's called The Richest Man in Babylon, if I'm not mistaken. That's another extremely good book to read. Very, very practical and insightful. I think these are the two books that come to mind at the top of my head right now, Radhika.
Thank you so much. I don't want to end this episode, but we do have certain time limit. So thank you so much, Robin, for spending and for talking with us, for sharing your knowledge with our listeners. I'm sure you have helped all of us.
It's been a pleasure, Radhika. And I think as I speak to you and everyone else, I myself learn along the way. There's not something that any of us have perfected. So it's been a great opportunity to speak to you on this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.